Keep the change, you filthy animal.
So good.
So he freaks out. He's scared of this movie.
Yeah, because he's eight. This is probably the first time he's seen violence that wasn't directed immediately at him before.
Hello and welcome to Dial Up Movies, the podcast devoted to preserving the memory of your favorite films from the 90s. Whether good or bad, we're going to see how those films hold up. On today's show, we'll be discussing Home Alone from 1990, directed by Chris Columbus and starring Macaulay Culkin, Joe Pesci, and Daniel Stern. My name is Lou, and joining me are my two co-hosts, Steven.
Hey guys.
And Tim.
Nice to see everybody again.
So this is part two of our Christmas episodes.
Oh yeah, something we didn't actually do on our last Christmas episode. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
It's a festivus for the rest of us.
You know, I don't know about anyone's reactions, but you know our reactions about the last movie. It was kind of a not great Christmas movie, but today we have a
arguably the best Christmas movie.
Up there. Definitely up there.
And you know what it does? Why it's one of the best Christmas movies, Lou?
Why?
It's because it doesn't beat you over the head with the Christmassiness of it. There's a few scenes that are very dedicated to Christmas, but for the most part, the way I remember it and the way I took it when I watched it last night was that this is really a movie about a kid. It's a character study of Kevin McAllister.
I agree with you on that. I actually was thinking about that when I was watching it for the show. Like you said, a lot of movies just beat you over the head with it. And
well, Jingle All the Way is Christmas all the time.
That's true.
There's not a frame of that movie you can't think, oh shit, it's Christmas. But with Home Alone, you know, like, we're faced with this kid who's kind of shitty to his family. with good reason. The reason he has this little explosion at the dinner scene, totally fucking warranted. I totally would have done exactly the same thing and not felt any remorse.
About the pizza?
Yeah. Even after getting sent to bed to, you know, sleep with Fuller on the Haida couch or whatever. But, so he's kind of a dick, and he meets his comeuppance, and he defends his home against burglars, and he reunites an old man with his family. He does a lot of cool shit throughout the course of this movie, and yeah, there's like that church scene, and there's, you know, some hints that it's Christmas, but at no point does he worry about whether Santa is going to come to him. At no point does he worry about presents. He doesn't give a shit about any of that, because he's now taken out of his environment as a little kid. He has no one looking out for him, and he does pretty okay.
Except for that scene where he goes to visit Santa, and Santa tells him the Hell's Kitchen. Yeah, he took the rest of the candy canes for her boyfriend.
He gives him three Tic Tacs.
Yeah, it's great.
There you go.
I don't know. I thought it was really interesting that this is... Both of our Christmas movies have a very heavy Chris Columbus hand in them. Mm. Mm-hmm. The first one is about, in my opinion, a great father trying to do something awesome for a shitty kid.
I'm not going to have
and this one is
yet.
About a great kid trying to do something awesome for his shitty family.
Yeah.
It's just a nice little coin flip. So
I love Catherine O'Hara, who plays Mrs. McAllister.
Mm-hmm.
And she's great in this movie. Her reactions, I mean, obviously she's put in an unrealistic situation. I don't know a single mother who would leave a child behind. But then again, you know, there's like a million people getting on those, like, airport shuttles or whatever, and she trusted her kids to do the headcount and shit.
First mistake.
Yeah, exactly. But
actually,
holy shit.
First mistake was having kids, but...
Yeah. Holy shit, Peter McAllister is the worst fucking father.
He just doesn't care!
He doesn't give a shit at all.
At best, lackadaisical, at worst, negligent.
Yeah.
Uncle Frank was his brother, right? Mm-hmm. They were brothers?
Yeah.
They were both shitty dads.
Oh, yeah. So Uncle Frank's a piece of shit, too.
And oh, man.
All of Kevin's siblings and cousins all fucking suck. Like, he did the right thing wishing his family away. And he proves, by the end of the movie, after he defends his home from the two burglars, that he could totally live on his
own. He doesn't need them.
Perfectly fine. He doesn't need jack shit from anybody.
Yeah.
He goes shopping. I don't even do that.
Yeah,
he
no,
cooks
that was
for
a,
himself. I don't even do
that's
that.
That's the best part. He's just like, you know, I'm 9 years old. Do you really think I'd be here by myself? And in my mind, I just extrapolated that to every year after. Like, I'm 11 years old. Do you really think I'd be here? I'm 15. Do you think I'm here alone? I'm 25. Why doesn't anyone love me?
Oh yeah, Kevin McAllister's totally gonna grow up real fucked up after this incident.
So
he just hasn't realized it by the end of the movie.
There's a theory floating around out there that Kevin McAllister grows up to be the Jigsaw killer in the Saw movies.
What? I want to hear this.
That's essentially the entire story. I didn't craft
it. Because the traps that he uses are so elaborate and meant to teach someone a lesson generally about how they treat other people.
Yeah.
I can almost see that, but not really. I don't think Kevin McAllister would use his powers for evil.
The flip side is the whole thing with Macaulay Culkin growing up to be a fucking weirdo.
The Pizza Underground?
I saw them last year.
An entire cheese pizza.
A lovely cheese pizza just for me.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I can't believe that's actually a thing that is happening.
Years
later. My friend Grant put out their tape.
Really?
Yeah. My friend Grant in North Carolina, like, put out the Pizza Underground tape.
So for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, Macaulay Culkin currently has a Velvet Underground cover band called Pizza Underground, where they take Velvet Underground songs and make them about pizza. And
on paper, this sounds like the best idea anyone ever had.
Well, their first, I think the first thing that they put out before they went like pretty big as far as like public appearance was a 6-minute or 7-minute video. Did you see this on YouTube?
It's
literally a Macaulay Culkin eating a slice of pizza on video, and then he puts the trash in the bag and walks off camera. Like, that's it. That's just all it is him eating pizza.
So Warhol, baby.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, and then last year, around this time last year, I think it was February of last year, saw them.
They played Philomoga, right?
They played in Philly, and it was a whole pizza-themed show with several pizza bands, and
yeah,
it was he's a bizarre guy.
I believe that.
Well, no, like, I had a few friends play Lollapalooza this year with him and Riot Fest, and it's just those things where they're like, yeah, we weren't allowed to talk to him. That was in the contract for bands. They're just like, you can't talk to Macaulay Culkin. Hmm.
At the show, they were like, oh, you know, after the, like, there was like, he was in the back. He played, like, I think he played kazoo, and he played tambourine, and he sang a little bit. But he wore sunglasses and stayed in the back, towards the end, the back of the stage. And there was, like, a woman and a man that were singing. They were, like, kind of the main songwriters, I guess. And they were like, after the show, we're going to be around to, like, hang out and talk if you want. Some of the guys from the band will be around to talk. Mm-hmm. And immediately, I'm like, he's not going to fucking come out. He's going to stay in the back. And that probably has something to do with that. I guess, I don't know. He's a weird dude. Every public appearance is him just being a super weirdo, and I don't know.
I mean, he grew up as Kevin McAllister. Like, I can't.
I don't see why that would fuck anyone up, though. You're the Home Alone kid. You get all that talk boy money.
He also hung out with Michael Jackson a lot.
Well, all right, that might do it. As far as we know, Michael Jackson was innocent, although probably not. But he's dead, and we don't speak ill of the dead on this podcast. And in this country,
that's a lie.
It's totally a lie. I'm totally being facetious right now. But in this country, you are, innocent until proven guilty.
All right, so I want to talk about
PMJ.
Chris Columbus real quick. I didn't know he's done all the movies that he actually has done or written or whatever. He's direct involvement with a lot of movies about kids. Like you were saying earlier, like there's Home Alone, and then he's done Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. He wrote The Goonies. He wrote Gremlins. He wrote Mrs. Doubtfire.
Okay.
And this film was written by John Hughes, who like was coming off of like nothing but like 7 hits in a row.
Nothing but hits.
Just to rattle a few off: 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, National Lampoon's Vacation series, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
All good. Well, not all of the vacation movies are good, but all the other ones you mentioned are good.
And
I'm a fan of 16 Candles.
I've never seen 16 Candles. I've never seen The Breakfast Club.
Dude, how have you never seen The Breakfast Club?
I don't know. I've missed it somehow.
You were an angsty teenager.
I'm an angsty adult.
Yeah, but now you have less friends.
That's true. Anyway, last thing I wanted to note just before we get into the actual film is that, and Tim had just said this a few minutes ago before we started recording, is that this was the highest grossing movie of 1990.
You told me that was disputed, right?
There's a dispute because there's different numbers as far as worldwide gross income. Mm-hmm. And it's neck and neck with Ghost.
Obviously, Home Alone is the better movie and therefore it made more money.
But it made about $500 million in 1990.
That's a lot of money. I also read somewhere that it's like a national pastime in Poland. Like, it gets aired on primetime TV in Poland every year because it's become a national tradition to watch Home Alone. And I don't see why that's a bad thing. I think we should follow the Polish and get rid of this Christmas Story bullshit and start playing Home Alone for 24 hours.
I don't really like the Christmas Story.
I love a Christmas Story, but I also think that they play Home Alone constantly this time of year. Like,
not constantly enough.
You need it on 24-hour rotation is what you need.
Yeah, basically.
All right.
Maybe occasionally throw in Home Alone 2, but nothing else.
All right.
No three apologists.
There's four.
Not a single one.
Actually, I think four was the Home Alone franchise Wikipedia page has Home Alone's 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. 2002 was Home Alone 4, and it was a reboot. They have a new actor playing every role, including Kevin McAllister. Marv returns. It looks terrible.
No.
Direct to DVD.
Of course. Of course it is.
I kind of feel like I have to watch this now.
Nope. Not doing it.
I mean, I'm just a glutton for punishment, so it's just... Yeah, no, that seems right up my alley. It's gotta be terrible.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, how could it not be terrible?
Right. Well, any...
Ashton Kutcher is Marv.
I don't know who played it. I shut that page down, but anyway... Let's get into the movie real quick, because we might as well talk about this great movie.
Well, I mean, I thought we had been, but I know we like.
I'm sorry. Scene to scene.
I mean, we're also operating under the assumption that everyone has seen Home Alone. Which,
if you haven't seen Home Alone,
I feel like is a pretty reasonable assumption.
If you haven't seen Home Alone, you should probably either watch it or kill yourself. I'm not sure which order you should do it in.
Definitely kill yourself before you watch it. Okay. It really adds to the experience.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can't imagine that there would be a person who would listen to this podcast that has not seen Home Alone.
There might be somebody out there.
Because the most ubiquitously loved movie from this era that we discuss that I know of. Forrest Gump, I think, are the two most loved 90s movies.
Really?
Yeah, I think you could talk to anybody about Forrest Gump and they'd be like, oh, I like that movie a lot.
I haven't seen it in a really long time, so
I watched it the other night. It's a good movie.
All right.
Really creepy.
We'll get to it.
Good movie.
We'll get to it eventually. Maybe.
Anyway, scene for scene. Go ahead.
Scene for scene. All right. This opens up in a very busy home, and there's people running all around, and there's a cop, played by Joe Pesci, standing in the doorway.
But is he a cop?
Is he a cop? I don't know.
We have no indication to believe that he's not a cop at this point in the movie.
Right. And it's just people running around like crazy. He's trying to get everyone's attention. He's trying to find whoever lives at this house.
Well, he's trying to find... Are your parents home? Is your mommy home?
But they don't live here. Yeah.
All the kids are being shitty. And, like, honestly, this scene is awesome because all of this movie is awesome, but I find it hard to believe that there could be a policeman standing in your, like, doorway in your home and not one person would stop and be like, hey, how are you, officer?
Listen, man, right. White privilege, you get to treat cops like shit. But anyway, so we've got Joe Pesci standing there, and next to the pizza guy. Or does the pizza guy show up in, like, 5 minutes?
He shows up in, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Our first view of Kevin McAllister is he's upstairs in his parents' bedroom. You know, again, he's seemingly helpless. He doesn't know how to pack his own suitcase.
That's a big part of his frustration. You know, he asks some of the older kids if they can help him pack because his mom tells him he has to pack his own suitcase. And he's like, oh, shit, I've never done this before. I don't know what to do.
And everyone's...
He goes to Big Pete.
Yeah.
And Big Pete's like, go fuck
yourself. Is that Big Pete?
That is Big Pete.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Big Pete is like, go fuck yourself. And a couple other people are like, go fuck yourself. You're useless. And
I believe his sister says, you're what the French call...
Les incompetents. Actually, funny story about that. My best friend in the world's name is Kevin. We met when I was in EMT school. And that's why we're friends, because he was consistently late to class, and he would come in, and the teacher would yell at him. And the third time he did it, I went, Kevin, you are such a disease. And he knew what I was referencing. And then he said something stupid later that day, and I told him that he is what the French call les incompetents. And then from that point on, we've been best friends. Shout out to Kevin Sessa.
I think friendship's built on, like, just blatant insults and, you know.
that's what I do. That's my charm.
No.
They're also built on references, or like the acknowledgement of references. I quote stupid shit all the time, most notably Star Wars, if anyone couldn't guess. And when someone like catches a weird reference or a quote, I immediately latch onto that person because most people in my life don't acknowledge those
things. Real recognize real. I feel that. All right, so...
Kevin says, this house is so full of people and it makes me sick. When I grow up and get married, I'm living alone.
Same, dude.
And... I actually liked the way they shot this, just because I didn't think about this until I watched it for this recording, but every time they show Kevin talking to an adult or another person, it's always shot from an angle up at the person, mm-hmm. and then every shot of Kevin is shot down. So it actually, for me, on this viewing, maybe previously, but definitely for this viewing, enhanced like that feeling of he's totally like insignificant to this entire family.
Mm. No one cares. No one
gives a shit.
But anyway,
and he goes and asks Buzz if he can help, right?
Yeah.
And Buzz is like, oh no, this is when he finds out that he has to sleep on the high to bed with Fuller.
Right.
If he has anything to drink, he'll wet the bed. And this is where we meet old man Marley.
Yeah. They're looking out the window and Buzz tells...
Hey, check it out. Old man Marley.
So it's like a cousin and Buzz and Kevin, and they go to the window and he tells a story about this.
By the way, this cousin is the Jewiest looking kid ever. He's got the big black afro. He looks like the kid that Wednesday falls in love with and has Family Values.
You're not wrong.
I just watched that the other day and he really does look like Dick.
Yeah, no, I just watched it like a week ago and I can't get that out of my head now.
That's awesome. I didn't think about that. Now, every time I watch it, I'm going to think of that fucking cousin. Anyway, he talks about how like their next door neighbor murdered a bunch of people and they're afraid of this guy, this old guy that lives next door. Anyway, now it's pizza delivery. The guy knocks over some statue out front and he has...
By the way, I think my new favorite joke in the movie is that the name of the pizza place is Little Nero's and their slogan is No Fiddling Around.
Really?
Yeah. Ah. That made me laugh really hard.
I didn't see the slogan. That's awesome.
Made me laugh really hard. Anyway, continue.
$120 in pizza. He's trying to get...
pizzas times 12 bucks.
$122.50.
Mr. McAllister comes over. He talks to the cop about their vacation. I don't know. Then we're at the pizza eating scene. That's more basically or less, it. Yeah. More or less, the Mr. McAllister tells the cop that they're going away to Paris for Christmas. They're going to be gone.
My brother lives there.
And I didn't know. I thought you were just telling me that. I didn't
know. No.
And the cop's happy about this, whatever. And then everyone starts eating pizza, and Kevin comes running downstairs. You made this point the other day.
Yeah, like he comes down like maybe 5 minutes after the pizza's arrived and been paid for so everyone can eat it. And he's like, where's the cheese pizza? And Buzz is like, oh, you can have some, but we'd have to barf it all up. And it's gone. Meh. And then Kevin's like... Kevin has like a Hulk outrage moment and he pushes Buzz into some milk and milk goes everywhere and it ruins a bunch of shit and everyone's pissed off at him, but Kevin stands his ground like a fucking man.
It's literally a scene of like 20 people crying over spilled milk.
Yeah.
Like it is. And that's exactly what it is.
And they're all staring Kevin down and he's like, Buzz was being a jerk. He knows that I don't like sausage and shit. And like he still gets sent to his room even though he's totally fucking right. And one of my favorite lines is Uncle Frank, look what you did, you little jerk. My sister and I say that to each other all the time.
It's a good line.
It was a great line.
You know, the whole family staring him down. Kevin here has a disease, gets sent upstairs. Actually, during the scene, I never knew this. I only knew this because of the research I did. But you actually see his American Airlines ticket get covered in milk and thrown away. With the napkins.
Oh, really?
There's a shot of just the trash can.
Yeah.
There's two throws of napkins. The first one, you see a red and white, it says American Airlines ticket on it. And then they throw, the second throw of napkins covers it up. So I never knew this, like I said, until I did the research, but they actually did put that plot point in there that like, that's another reason. There's another reason why he was missed is because not only, you know.
All the tickets line up.
All the tickets.
They don't have an extra ticket. Right. And they would have been like, oh, what the fuck?
Yeah. So anyway, he goes upstairs. His mom sends him to the third floor to sleep with Fuller. And he wishes his family would disappear. He makes the wish. And his mom says, I hope you don't really mean that. He says he does. And he goes to his room. And he just, that's it.
Cut to the next morning.
Well,
to the middle of the night when the a storm blows through and a tree branch falls on a power line, knocking out the power for their alarm clocks.
You know, they're supposed to leave the house at 8, I think, and then they wake up at 8 as the airport shuttle guys are knocking on the front door. And then there's this scene of where like, there's like a static camera and everyone's running around the house just doing shit to get ready.
In fast motion, Blister style.
And one of the older sisters has to do a head count of all the kids to ensure that everyone's going to get on the shuttle.
And this weird, creepy neighbor kid is, like, in the van digging through their shit.
He's a neighbor, and he's being a pest. But I actually did see that that kid was the... They kind of wrote the role for Macaulay Culkin, but they still tried out a bunch of kids. And he was, like, the lead audition. So if Macaulay Culkin didn't sign on, he was going to be Kevin McAllister. So that's why he put him in the film.
Macaulay Culkin take the role.
Yeah, because the kid sucks. but anyway, the older sister counts him as part of the group.
Because he's wearing a very similar hat to Kevin's winter hat.
Right. Assuming that Kevin's there, they're good to go. They go to the airport. They're really late, so they run.
Sam's got to make it to town.
They make the plane ride. And that's it. You know, are we all settled? I think we're good. Cut to Kevin waking up and coming down the stairs at home.
Mom?
Trying to find his family. And no one's home. And he thinks that...
I just figured this out, but this is why the movie's called Home Alone.
Because he's home.
That was alone. That was a joke.
I know it was a joke. It fell flat. Okay. Steven's asleep over there.
Wow. That was just...
It was an attempt at humor. Fuck you. Fuck you both.
You can't get mad when you fail. You can't get mad at us.
Of course I can.
If you try and like make a jump and you don't do it, you don't just yell at everybody who didn't make the jump. How dare you don't appreciate my hurdling.
This is America, Steven. I'm allowed to get mad at whoever I want to.
Oh man. Yeah, no. He's home alone, which is repeated ad nauseum.
Yeah. It goes back and forth a couple times where he's just like going to different rooms and whatever.
Buzz, I'm going through all your personal stuff. You better come out and pound me.
You know, just like Marv and Harry just going, little kids, home alone. Did anybody ever watch Upright Citizens Brigade?
Of course.
I saw it a couple times. It's been a long time.
Do you remember the skit about the guy coming into the video store and saying, I had the titular line in Star Wars.
Yes, I do.
And the guy was just like, there was no titular.
Nobody said Star Wars
in
Star Wars.
Yeah, I do. I'm flying in my spacecraft alongside the Millennium Falcon. And I go, man, I'm just so tired of all these Star Wars. And I look at the camera.
I love that.
It's like, you never say that. That's exactly how I feel every single time the phrase Home Alone is uttered in this movie. I'm just like, I wonder if Joe Pesci goes around going, you know, I had the titular line in Home Alone. Everybody's like, what the fuck did you even say? I can't hear you, you small man.
Oh, man, that was a horrible Joe Pesci impression, by the way.
Yeah, it was god-awful, but, you know.
Not that my impressions are anything to celebrate, but,
I think statistically you have the worst impressions of
anyone. No question.
Steven can do a great Homestar Runner cast. I do a decent Watto.
What do I do? Nothing.
Your Tone Loke isn't... Actually,
it's pretty bad.
It's the best of the three of us, though.
Ah, Jesus. All right, so Kevin's in Buzz's room, and he's digging through his like secret trunk, and he finds a Playboy. And actually, I never caught this before. I watched it this time. But he goes, "No clothes on anybody. Sickening."
And he throws it over his head.
But he pulls out some firecrackers. He soaked on those, and then he finds a photo of Buzz's girlfriend.
Woof.
And I didn't know this, again, until I did the research, but that's not a girl in the photo. It was like an art director's son that they threw a wig on and put him in this camera. Chris Columbus felt bad making fun of some little girl. I'm
like, what better way to give a little girl an eating disorder?
Hey, can we take your picture for this movie? And then the highest grossing movie of the year.
Everyone agrees that you're ugly.
Ah, his girlfriend, it was ugly.
Yeah, that would suck. He then goes and does all these things that, like, I wanted to do as a kid. Like, you know, jumping up and down on my parents' bed, eating popcorn, and eating ice cream for breakfast, and playing with a BB gun in the house. And
watching junk and eating rubbish. Somebody come stop me.
And he puts on a movie, Angels with Filthy Souls.
This is... God. I wish that this was a real movie.
I do, too.
I love this so
I
much.
Wanted to believe so much when I was younger that it was a real movie. And it would, like, come on Turner one day.
I know. I really wanted that to happen.
Never happened.
But this is where we get the line that's repeated a couple times in the movie is, keep the change, you filthy animal.
It's one of the best things ever. It really is. For those of you who don't know, which there should be zero of you, Kevin's watching a black and white, like a film noir kind of drama where some guy comes in to drop off or to get paid for a drug run that he did. And this creepy old man is like the drug boss, I guess. And he says, I'm going to give you to the count of 10 to get you ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property. While he's holding a Tommy gun to the guy. And the guy's like, all right, Johnny, I'm sorry. One, 2, 10. And then he riddles this dude with bullets, like way too many fucking bullets, all the while he's shrieking with laughter. And then he says, Lou's favorite line, go ahead, Lou, I'll let you do it.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
So good.
So he freaks out. He's scared of this movie. Scared.
Yeah, because yeah, he's 8. This is probably the first time he's seen violence that wasn't directed immediately at him before.
emotional and physical.
So dark.
Well, I mean, he's the youngest in the house of 4 other older kids. He probably got beat up all the time.
Probably.
Oh, man.
I wasn't insisting that his like parents beat him or anything.
I kind of like that thought though. Like, it changes the whole dynamic. It makes sense why he hates his family.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're cut to his parents, his shitty parents, on the plane, halfway to fucking France
in first class in huge seats.
Right. While Uncle Frank is trying to steal the silver.
That's real silver.
Yeah. Put it in your purse.
But Frank.
And Kevin's mom is like. She's kind of freaking out. She feels like she forgot something. I guess
husband Peter McAllister is at this point, because she's freaking out because she feels like she forgot something, and she says she feels like it was important. And Peter McAllister, knowing full well that he totally did not leave the garage door open, is like, yeah, you know what it is? I left the garage door open. I'm just going to agree with you, so you shut the fuck up. I don't have to listen to you anymore.
That seems reasonable. He probably thinks that her fears are totally irrational.
But you convince her that they're irrational. You don't just lie to make her feel better, because especially when he finds out that he left a fucking kid at home. How shitty does he feel? He's like, well, you know, I thought the worst thing that I did today was leave the garage door open. Not the fact that I left my youngest son behind while we left from Chicago to go to Paris. It's kind of a long way.
It's pretty far.
If they're like on the East Coast, that would be like, oh, okay, it's just a short hop across the river, but not really. Peter McAllister.
Fuck Chicago. Everything is far from Chicago.
So the next scene is Kevin doing something I, again, always wanted to do as a kid. He brings a sled in the house and slides down the stairs to crash through the front door.
I'm just going to bring this up at this point. As a young, blonde-haired, blue-eyed child who was incredibly thin, this movie made me want to do so much shit. I was always hoping to be left home alone so I could either A, just eat ice cream whenever I wanted, B, sled down the steps, C, booby-trap everything. The fuck? It was just like, I remember one time I was like, maybe 8 or 9, and I found like a ball of twine, and in my mind all of these booby traps operated on trip wires, and I just thought, oh, if you have a trip wire attached to anything, that makes it a booby trap.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's logical.
Kid logic holds up.
So I just took this ball of twine and wrapped it around every single doorknob in my house and connected all the doorknobs, so there was this weird spider web of coarse rope running through the house and running back and forth. I'm just like, oh man, this feels wild. My parents are gonna be so mad. And then I got very, very serious rope burn across like all of my arms and my neck, like to the point where I had like scabs for like weeks. So I learned quickly that not everything that happens in movies is stuff you really want to do in real life.
It's a good lesson to learn early on.
I still eat ice cream for breakfast, though, because being an adult is the fucking sickest.
Yeah. Minus, like, bills and shit.
Well, that's the part that sucks.
That's the price you pay to
eat as much ice. Is that what I pay bills for? Is that eating ice cream for breakfast?
I pay taxes so I can eat ice cream for breakfast.
Fair enough.
Because this is America, goddammit.
Where are we?
But yeah, so he's in a toboggan. Like, he's just having the time of his life. He's the coolest kid in the world.
He doesn't give a shit. He's stoked that his family come. Like, I guess the part that like I didn't even think about was he made a wish that his family would disappear. And in the morning, the whole house is kind of still like messy because they jumped out of bed really quickly to go to this flight. But like, the rapture happened in his house, and he's totally okay with it.
Totally chill. There is no downside to this.
He said, you know, he's like, when he runs outside, he's like, oh, look, their cars are still here. They didn't go to the airport. Like, he thinks that his family literally just, poof, gone. And he was stoked on it.
Yeah, but also, case in point, he can see the cars because the garage door was open. Kevin McAllister is a shitty husband, but not because he lied. Because he forgot his child.
So after Kevin slides out his front door, we cut to his parents on the plane, and like the Uncle Frank and like his wife are trying to convince like Kevin's parents that it's not that bad, it's not that big a deal, like it's fine, he'll be okay. You live in a safe part of the, you know, Chicago or whatever.
Yeah, it's a safe.
It's like real suburbia, you know.
It's a very. I think what Uncle Frank is trying to say is that it's a very white neighborhood.
You're not wrong. That's exactly what
he's exactly what he's trying to say. He's just doing it, you know, with tact and class.
Then we're back home, and we're introduced to Harry and Marv. This is when they're casing the neighborhood, and Marv, Harry is the cop. It's Joe Pesci's character. They're cat burglars.
They're the wet bandits.
They're the wet bandits. They have a plumbing truck. That they, the most suspicious looking guys ever.
True.
And anyway, they're talking about, like, you know, he was casing the McAllister house so that they could plan out their Christmas time robberies. And they make an attempt on the McAllister house. Mm. Kevin's home, and he hears them trying to come in, and he kind of like, is this when he puts on the movie?
On a light.
Okay.
In the basement, I think. And then they're, oh, I thought you said nobody was supposed to be home. And then they back off.
And he gets kind of freaked out. When we're in France, and when the there's another running through the airport scene, but eventually Kevin's mom gets to a phone and she calls the police in their whatever their town is.
Yeah, they don't mention the town.
And they're like, oh, can you send a cop over to the house to check on my son? And the cops give her a real hard time over the phone.
Hyper on too.
And I don't know. Then it's back and forth between France and between home, and Kevin's like trying to pump himself up by, like, saying, I'm the man of the house, and, like, trying to, like, not be afraid of, like, everything.
I'm not afraid anymore.
But he's also, like, doing very manly things, like shaving and...
Right, I guess that's the next...
Putting on deodorant.
Is that the next morning? When he's, like, shaving, like, doing all the manly stuff, and he's, like, combing his hair, I guess, like an adult would, and puts on aftershave for no reason. Because I guess they don't show him shaving, right?
Yeah, no, this is the thing that I never understood, like... I would always ask my parents, I'm like, why did he scream after he slapped his face? And they're like, oh, because it was aftershave. It's like, aftershave only burns if you just shaved. And
right, and you cut yourself.
And only if you shaved poorly.
Inexpertly, yes.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, for all intents and purposes, this is just a scene of a 9-year-old boy slapping his face and screaming at his own reflection.
which I think is pretty normal.
Which, honestly, a pretty... heavy existential commentary, you know? It's just like, here we see the young man become a man as he takes up manly things, and with the manly things, the recognition of the void and the incoming death. That is why Kevin screams. That's the Lost Chris Columbus director's commentary, you know, with Werner Herzog.
Okay, I was wondering who you're pulling from.
I thought it was like David Attenborough.
No. Is this
like a nature documentary?
Oh, man. I wonder if Zizek has written anything on this, because it's got to be fucked up.
I don't know who that is. No, I'm not.
Slavoj Zizek is this, like, weird Serbian philosopher who just writes about pop culture and just has, like, all sorts of crazy Marxist commentary on everything. And it's fantastic.
This sounds exactly like something I want to read.
Yeah, no, you definitely want to read it.
Oh, I hope he has a Home Alone thing.
This is the thing. I'm wondering if Zizek has written anything about Home Alone. So if you have anything, send it to us. Facebook, Twitter, whatever. I'm going to be doing my own research. But no, like, this is a 9-year-old kid who is, first off, has wished everyone away. He's already cursed with formidable powers. He has to very much watch what he says. And he realizes that he's just alone, not just in his house, but in the universe.
I was just imagining, what if Iggy from Surf Ninjas was Kevin McAllister?
Oh.
What if, like, I woke up tomorrow and my entire family was gone?
You know what? Kevin McAllister and Rob Schneider.
An unlikely pairing.
Well, they were in Home Alone 2 together.
Well, yeah.
Maybe he goes to New York to get that training to further his powers.
No.
Oh, shit.
No, that's right. He is there.
He's like a bellhop, right?
Yeah, he's like a bellhop. He like coughs and wants money, and he's just like, he gives him like some candy or some shit.
All right. Anyway, where are we? Oh, this is when he goes into Buzz's room, and he's trying to get I guess a box of cash on the top shelf.
Yeah, he keeps his life. Buzz's life savings is like $8.
Yeah, it was all ones.
Yeah,
but he, you know, he collapse. He breaks all the shelves in Buzz's room, and the tarantula gets out. Yep. His pet tarantula, and then he leaves the house. He sees the wet bandits, and then I guess Yeah, this is when he goes to buy a toothbrush, but he sees the wet bandits like van across the street. Mm. And he says something like, oh, I thought whoever the family lives across the street, I thought they went away mm-hmm. for Christmas. And then it's like a scene of them in the house, I guess stealing from these people, but they're just destroying just everything. Shit.
Well, Marv is using his crow. He's wearing goggles, like a snorkel that he found. And he's just like taking shit, locking it into his cloth burglar sack with his crowbar, not giving a shit if any of it breaks.
Yeah, it makes
every sound effect is glass breaking, and Harry's sitting on the floor playing with an RC car that he found out about.
Yeah. Which is great, because then Harry tries to like criticize Marv, and it's just like, you were playing with a child's toy.
You know, you are one of the all-time great cat burglars.
Yeah, I don't know. They hear a phone call. This is when they're in that home, they hear a phone call from Kevin's dad saying, hey, we're in Paris. Give us a call when you can, kind of deal. I guess
I'll give you the number.
Yeah. So it's confirmation for the wet bandits that the McAllisters are indeed away, and they don't have anything to worry about at the house. Now we're following Kevin as he's going to this little grocery store, tries to find a toothbrush, and then for some reason asks, oh, is this approved by the
American Dental Association?
Yeah.
And to this day, every time I buy a toothbrush, I ask the clerk if it's approved by the American Dental Association.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
How many blank stares do you get?
All of them. I get all of the blank stares.
Everybody's just like, what?
I'm like, I don't go as far as, well, could you find out?
You should, and just watch the confusion.
Yeah.
Just like a packed Rite Aid or something like that. Like
you know, like the Walgreens at Broad and Snyder already fucking hell. I can't even imagine trying to ask anyone who works there for anything.
Yeah, it's do it at like 2 a.m.
Oh, it's yeah.
It's a there. Dark place. Have you been there?
No, I'm imagining like
it's
like
a block away and it's dark at night. It's real creepy.
Have you ever been to like a Walmart at 4 a.m. when the Skeksis are out?
Dude, I grew up in North Carolina. Hell yes, I have.
And every one of them looks like a Skeksis from the Dark Crystal. Right? Yep. Every employee is just a Jim Henson creature wearing a blue vest. You ask them for their help and they're like, it's terrifying.
So Kevin steals the toothbrush.
Oh, well, accidentally, because old man Morley comes in and terrifies him.
Yeah, so he runs away.
In fairness, I know that it turns out he's a pretty nice dude, but he's just intensely staring at this little kid like...
Well, after slamming a bloodied, bandaged hand on the counter, like...
Well, he's trying to buy Band-Aids for it.
Yeah, but who wouldn't be terrified by that?
Especially at 9 years old. Especially when you're convinced this man has already killed his entire family and is using their mummy salt to numb the ice on their block. Like,
band name, mummy salt. Dibs.
That's awesome. So he runs out of the store. I can't even concentrate with that.
Mummy salt.
Kevin bolts out of the store with his non-American Dental Association approved toothbrush. Jimmy, I guess? Chases after him.
Stop yeah. that boy.
So a cop who's standing outside giving a speeding ticket chases this kid across a frozen pond, loses him, and Kevin is wrecked with guilt after getting away. Like, I'm a criminal. And
yeah.
Which is funny that he has more remorse over stealing a... This is what, 1990, a 25-cent toothbrush, than, you know, for all intents and purposes, murdering 20 members of his family, you know?
Because he has no idea what happened to them. They're just gone.
Yeah. They could be dead. He doesn't care.
They could be erased from the annals of history.
He's like, this is the real me now. I'm alone, but I stole this toothbrush. How can I live with myself?
I just find it interesting that Jimmy, the store clerk's strategy for catching the shoplifter, was to hand off the chase to the fat old cop.
After when he was like 16 years old.
Yeah, and pretty sprightly. He's like, hey, stop that kid. And then the cop was like, okay. And it's like, if he had just taken off running, he totally would have caught Kevin relatively quickly. But fat cop on ice equals, like, faceplant.
A great thing to watch as the ice campaigns.
Yeah.
Presenting Fat Cops on Ice. The majesty of the men in blue.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Doesn't it? Who wants to pitch this to Mayor Nutter? I think Dorth Plaza just opened up. We could get the entire police force on there.
Oh, God. Now I want that to happen, too. Mummy Salt and Fat Cops on
Mummy
Ice.
Mummy Salt playing Fat Cops on Ice.
God.
That's awesome. All right, where are we? The Wet Bandits are still stealing from more homes, and Marv...
The Wet Bandits, we skipped this part when they're in the other family's home. It's because Marv, in his infinite wisdom, likes to take dish rags and shove them into all the sinks in the house and then start running the faucet so that they overflow. Because he's a dick.
No, man, he's one of the greats. All the
I understand that it's in his mind they're calling hard, but it's a dick move. It's going to cause irreversible damage to the foundation of those homes, because all of those families are on vacation for like a week.
Also to your life, because when you get caught, as the cop tells him, we know every single house you hit.
See,
now.
But that's circumstantial evidence until he says, yeah, that's right, we're the Wet Bandit. If he had just denied that shit, it wouldn't have mattered.
That's it.
He wants to take ownership. He's willing to go down for what he's created, this empire of the Wet Bandits.
I feel like Harry would have been much better at this if he hadn't included Marv in any of his plans.
Probably. He had like a full, like, you know, perfectly replicated
schedule for when the lights were going to come on
right.
All the houses.
Yeah, he had a police uniform that was apparently good enough to be passable to anybody. Yeah.
Well, he only really spoke with some of the kids and Peter McAllister, who obviously does not give a shit about anything.
Yeah, Peter McAllister, definitely not the most in-touch dude.
So, I don't know. Kevin, when he's coming back from stealing this toothbrush, he runs into the Wet Bandits as they're leaving a driveway, and he recognizes Harry by the gold tooth that he has that he noticed when he was dressed as a cop in his house. Harry realizes there's a weird interaction. They start following this kid down the street in their van, in their creepy rape van, and they follow him to a church where he runs and like hides in a manger scene, right? Mm-hmm. Is it this?
He pretends to be a shepherd, I think.
Yeah. And then he says, when those guys come back, I'll be ready. Next scene is the Wet Bandits come back to the house the next night, and Kevin has set up a little party in his house with cardboard cutouts of Michael Jordan, yep. And
creepy-ass mannequins. Like, why the fuck do they have so many mannequins in their house?
I noticed that when they went into the basement for the first time early on, they were kind of spread around the basement in, like, that first scene when, like, the raptures happened. Yeah. And I thought that. Like, I forgot about the dance, like, the fake party scene, but, like, I didn't know why the fuck they had that many. Like, no one does any sewing.
So many mannequins.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's, like, what, five?
At least. Well, I understand the one that's, like, a seamstress mannequin where it's just, like, a female-esque torso. That they would use to sew dresses and shit.
Sure,
but like they have like full-on like with faces and shit, like plastic mannequins that look like Buster from like Mythbusters fame.
But you know, so
those lying around.
I don't know, but the creepy McAllister.
What does Peter McAllister do for a living?
I don't know. He's a creepy dude.
Yeah.
But anyway, Kevin's he has like all the silhouettes in the windows of giving the illusion that people are in the house and they're having a party and they're walking around, and he's. The scene of Kevin in the house just, like, shaking his arms, waving ropes around.
With the ropes, yeah, with the twine.
I'm telling you, man, it literally makes everything go in this movie.
It kind of does. Yeah. I mean, the tar helps a lot. But we'll get to that, I guess.
So, yeah,
so the Wet Bandits are deterred because it seems like there's a lot of people hanging out in this house.
Yeah, so they leave, again, without doing any burglary. And then... There's a small scene of the family in Paris. They're all frustrated because they're there in Kevin's home, but we can skip that. I mean, does it matter?
Buzz has a good line when the one girl is like, are you worried about Kevin? And he's like, no, I'm not worried about Kevin for three reasons. A, I'm not that lucky. Two, we live in a safe neighborhood. And three, I forget what the other one
is. Oh, no, he doesn't say three. He says D.
D, okay, that's right. So A, 2, and D.
Oh, D is that they live on the most boring street in the whole country. Yeah. But then we're back at home, and Kevin's has ordered a pizza from the same delivery guy that delivered, I guess, the day before.
Yeah, Little Nero's.
And
no fiddling around.
He fucks over this delivery guy real bad because
he leaves him some kind of a tip. I know it's
20 cents.
It's 20 cents. So it's he orders more than he had. And seriously, the delivery guy is always knocking over their fucking statue.
All right, fair enough.
That guy learn to drive.
So he orders a pizza and he gives the delivery guy a 20-cent tip, and then he plays the guy. He hears him say like, "Oh, cheapskate" or whatever. Somehow he knows he was going to get pissed off, so he plays the murder scene from Angels with Filthy Souls and scares the shit out of this delivery guy.
Yep, well, because he plays the I'm going to give you to the count of ten.
Yeah.
And then machine gun fire.
Yeah. Which, it must be a killer sound system on that tiny little...
Well, if you notice, he had two giant standalone, like, impressive-looking speakers next to that TV.
I didn't notice that.
It looked
that.
Like my dad had a pair of, like, old Bose speakers when I was a kid, and then they looked exactly like that. So these are big, probably pretty powerful speakers blasting that machine gun noise.
Didn't notice it. All right, I guess it makes sense. Kevin's a smart kid.
My favorite part about this is that the pizza guy doesn't report it.
Oh, yeah, like,
exactly. Hey, I got shot at.
Yeah, like this guy just gave me 20 cents and then threatened me and then unloaded his fucking machine gun at me in the middle of suburbia. Like, you don't call the cops over that? Like,
well, the cops are obviously very busy from their interaction with Catherine O'Hara.
So this is when we get the line, a lovely cheese pizza just for me. And he has what he wants. He doesn't need anything else in the world. He's got his pizza. He's alone. It sounds like my dream.
Honestly, yeah. No,
like that's not even a joke. That's like sincerely my dream.
Nice big house all to yourself. Nobody bothering you.
Pizza. BB gun. Yep. Firecrackers.
Yeah. You know, I gotta admit, I'm 27. This sounds like a great.
It sounds like what sounds like I'm gonna do after this.
Yeah. We don't have a BB gun though.
I'll find one.
I mean, Walmart, late night run.
That's true.
I don't think they sell those anymore, do they? Don't you have to have a license to have a BB gun these days?
I have no idea. I actually never owned a BB gun, so.
Thanks, Obama.
Jesus Christ. So we're back at the airport, and the mom's trying to convince. This is something that probably could never happen with
anymore.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Post 9/11, this is completely unreasonable, so, but like. I don't know. I had an ex who told me once that she bought an airplane ticket. Like, she used to live in Hawaii, and she bought an airplane ticket to New York from someone at the airport for $50. Like, they were just getting rid
like
of it.
Before nine, like before 9/11, or
yeah, like oh, yeah. This was like back in like the 80s, like late 80s, early.
Yeah, 90s. I believe that. So like, what Kevin's mom is trying to do is she's trying to get home. She opted to stay at the airport, waiting for a potential standby, to get back to the States from Paris and. She finds this old couple, and she's giving them essentially like thousands of dollars.
Well, she's giving them a pair of earrings, I think a pocket translator, $500.
A ring. Menus.
She's throwing everything in but the kitchen sink.
A ring, $1,000 in cash for one seat.
Yeah. Is that a Rolex?
Do you think it is?
No. Fantastic. One of my favorite jokes in the entire movie.
And then she says no. The woman's like, no, I don't think it's a Rolex.
But who can tell?
But yeah. Who can tell? Exactly.
And they go for it. And I think that ticket was to... I think later on in the film, she like gives her like itinerary of where Dallas.
This is just to the States. It's not to where she's trying to go.
I think she went from Paris to Dallas, I think is what they said.
No,
anyway.
She went to Paris from New York to Dallas.
To... And where am I? So yeah, so she gets to the States with this flight, and like all it was, I think, for them to wait an extra day or something like that, or like 2 days.
And you know, the old couple caves because it's Christmas and there's a kid home alone.
Yeah, and the guy is definitely the woman has the guy by the balls, and she goes,
the crotchety old man,
we're gonna stay here, and he goes, I don't give a shit about this kid. I have a mustache. I want to go home.
That's exactly how I feel every day. I have a mustache. I want to go home.
So the next scene is the grocery shopping scene where Kevin's goes to the grocery store by himself, and he's got everything his family or his what once was his family needs.
Well, he gets Tide
and milk
and a microwavable macaroni and cheese dinner and a package of Army Men for the kids,
right?
And some orange juice. Wait, I have a coupon for that. And he uses coupons. Good. I am 27. I don't use a fucking. I've never used a coupon in my life. Fuck that noise. I'm not digging through shit and finding scissors. I'll pay full price like God intended.
What do these people think I am, poor?
Oh.
Whoops.
So the cashier is giving him a little bit of shit. She's like asking him real creepy questions. Like she probably drives like a passenger van with like no windows.
Like sliding doors.
No, I think she's just concerned. She's like, are you here alone? And he says, ma'am, I'm 8 years old. Do you think I would be here alone? And then she keeps going with the line of questioning because she's pretty sure Kevin's full of shit. And then when she gets to the, what does she ask him?
She goes, where's your mom? Where's your dad? Where do you live?
Yeah, she's like, where's your mom? He's like, outside the car. Where's your dad? Oh, he's at work. Where do you live?
Can't tell you. That.
Why not?
You're a stranger.
Boom. Owned.
Checkmate.
Boned by Kid Logic that holds up to this day. And she gives up. She's like, all right, you win. You're obviously...
And
no,
he gives her such a shitty look when he says
so
that, too.
So good.
It stung me, and I wasn't asking the questions.
And he's paying her no attention, like, looking through the little newspaper he's got. Like, this bitch does not matter to Kevin. He's now walking home from the grocery store.
And all of his groceries fall out of the bottom of the bags. That's obviously happened to you. Yep. Yeah. Has that happened to you?
Yeah.
It's the worst feeling in the world.
You just want to punch everything.
He doesn't say fuck. He doesn't get angry.
Oh, he's 8. He's not going to be like, fuck. Although, if I were 8 and that happened, I probably would.
But yeah, so then, the web bandits?
Well, they try and come back again.
They come back the next night. Well, and
isn't this where Marv does his reconnaissance?
Yeah, he goes to like the back door, and Kevin does the same thing
with the tape. Angels with Filthy Souls.
He fucks with Marv playing the same gunshot thing, and Marv's all freaked out. And then they had this weird
Somebody got blown away.
Yeah, they have a conversation, like a real conversation about who else is working this neighborhood. Yeah. Like, they're gonna blame us for this. Mm. Like, we gotta find out who it was. Who's Snake? Snake sounds so familiar.
Snakes. I don't know no snakes.
Oh, but the other thing I thought was smart was with this scene, he actually adds the firecrackers to a trash can to accentuate
it's like a pot.
Is that what it was?
He puts them in like a cast iron pot and sets them off just as the machine gun fire starts, so there's an extra kind of boom to it.
Yeah, which would be pretty...
Because
pretty,
I'm sure you could trick a pizza guy.
Scare the shit out of me, yeah.
I mean, you could scare a pizza guy with just the sound system, but, I mean, a seasoned criminal like Marv, you know, he needs to feel that impact.
I mean, that dude has a calling card. Like,
he is a wet bandit.
Hardened.
See, I never played with firecrackers as a kid.
It was illegal in my state.
Well, I grew up in your state, and did you ever play with firecrackers?
I mean, of course he did. He's from North Carolina.
Well, see, the thing is, firecrackers are illegal in North Carolina. But I live 15 minutes from the border, and South Carolina fucking loves explosives.
All right, fair enough.
This is something that I feel like people who aren't from the Carolinas or the South don't understand. North Carolina is, like, civilized, for the most part. And then South Carolina is, like, the weird idiot fucking brother that we just, like... Like, the top border of North Carolina with Virginia is just nice and even, and the bottom border is jagged, like someone just carved out a bunch of spots, and that's because we carved out every fucking spot we didn't want, and we gave it to South Carolina.
What you're saying is you did play with fireworks.
Oh, yeah, because we would make runs across the border, and especially after you're, like, 16 and you have your own car. Yeah, you go out and you get Roman candles on a Friday afternoon and just spend the entire weekend shooting them at each other.
Yeah,
and everyone
see, I have had
can.
Roman
yeah.
candle fights, but I was like 20 or 21 when that happened.
No, it's just like the next step.
It doesn't hurt if you're quick.
That's what she said.
Plus, that was.
Yeah.
I was cracking myself up before I even said it. I couldn't get it out.
That's what he said.
Slow clap for Lou.
I get one joke every couple episodes. It's all right.
You do all right.
That was good.
So, all right. Now we're back at in Scranton, Pennsylvania, with Kevin's mom.
Yep.
She's made it to Scranton finally.
But she doesn't know that. She has to ask the woman.
Where am I?
Scranton.
And the nerdy dude behind the
he doesn't look like he's happy to be in Scranton either. He's like, I'm sorry, but you're in Scranton. This sucks.
And she, you know, I guess it's Christmas Eve at this point, and she wants to get home for Christmas morning. And we're at this point the scene's interrupted by John Candy, who plays Gus Polinski, the Polka King of the Midwest. And
has a darker sentence ever been uttered in history of man?
I think a lot of his lines were improvised because I don't know if anyone could write for John Candy, essentially.
No, at this point in his career, I don't think he could. And all of his lines are so, like, warm and heartfelt in their disturbingness, in a way. Like, when he meets Kevin McAllister's mom, he's trying so hard for her to recognize him. Like, we had a couple of hits, you know, and then she's like, no, I don't know who you are. And he, like, starts singing them. And
polka, no, polka, polka. No?
I'm sorry, you said you could help me?
He said they sold, like, 690 copies of something in Sheboygan, which I don't know where that is. But they're not a very...
I've heard the name before.
Have you really? Yeah. Not in Home Alone?
Maybe.
It's one of those ghost memories that you implant for yourself.
Could be.
But anyway, his band, their flight was canceled. They have to get to Milwaukee, and his polka band is renting a budget van,
to
drive from Scranton to Milwaukee, and he offers her a ride.
Ms. McAllister a ride.
It's a far drive.
It's like 14 hours.
Yeah. So she, as long as you don't mind hitching a ride with a bunch of polka guys, you're good to go.
And she's all excited about it. And in my head, I'm thinking, not something you would do in 2014.
Probably not.
Hey, I'm going to get in the back of a windowless van with 14 men.
I thought you just meant associating with a polka band.
Exactly where I was.
Okay.
Any Midwesterners,
Listen, the only polka I'll tolerate is Weird Al Yankovic.
Exactly. Polka your eyes out.
Alternative polka from Bad Hair Day is still one of my favorite songs of all time.
It's great. It's really, really good.
So anyway, the Wet Bandits, we're caught back to the Wet Bandits, and they finally realize that Kevin's actually home alone. Is this where Harry says the line?
Yeah.
He's home alone.
Yeah.
And they plan to come back at 9 o'clock that night, Christmas Eve evening.
Also, I don't have much experience as a cat burglar, but it seems like 9 o'clock is real early to start cat burglaring.
Yeah, I think so.
Not in winter,
On Christmas Eve?
Yeah, but I mean, Christmas Eve, if there's any family still around in the neighborhood,
They've cased it. They know everybody's gone.
That's true.
Except for old man Marley. He's still around.
Yeah, with his mummy salt, he's no threat to anyone.
He's a threat to his own family, apparently. That's where he got the mummy salt.
So, Kevin, he has a couple hours to wait out, the burglary at night. So he goes to see Santa Claus in his time. And he's just missed Santa. He talks to an elf.
When I was a kid, I don't know why I'm bringing this up, because it's probably not something I should admit, but when I was a kid, for some reason, I thought the girl who played the elf was very pretty. I don't really know why.
No, so did I, dude.
I watched it the other day, and the girl who plays the elf is pretty. Not a weird thing.
Okay.
Nah, go ahead in a minute. It's cool.
Right, I thought maybe it was a weird elf fetish kind of thing, but I guess...
I mean, we could turn it into that if you want. Dude, I'm pretty sure if you Google elf fetish or elf... Oh, man, there's two branches of elf porn. There's fantasy elf porn. No, we're going to talk about it.
We're going to talk about this. I'm into this. I like the turn this discussion has taken. There's the fantasy elf porn, and what's the other branch, Lou?
There's Christmas elf porn.
Okay, so you have, Lord of the Rings, and then you've got the North Pole.
Lord of the Rings all day.
You watch Lord of the Rings porn all day?
No, I'm saying if I had my choice between the two, I would go Lord of the Rings over Christmas elf.
But occasionally you want to spice things up a little bit. Yeah. Santa's little helper,
Santa's little helper going to Rivendell,
Oh, we're going to cross these universes.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? We're already talking about them. You say not to cross the streams, but that's the only way you're going to send them back through the gate.
Oh, man. Tim's uncomfortable.
I'm trying to come up with a decent joke about Santa's little helper going down on the two towers, but I can't come up with a clever way to phrase
it. I think you just cleverly phrased it.
Takes the meaning of they're taking the hobbits to Isengard. Completely different life.
The North Pole. That's the only dick joke you need.
I don't know. I feel like I need a lot of dick jokes in my life. I read crack.com a lot.
Oh, God, I haven't looked at the website not since Starship Troopers, I think was the last time I looked at crack.com.
It's not what it used to be.
Yeah. In its heyday, it was 2004, 2003?
Yeah. More or less. Their video series are pretty good, though.
I've seen a couple here and there.
I can't believe we're talking right now
about
crack.com has fallen off.
It really has, though, dude.
Man, you remember when crack.com was insightful and cutting social commentary?
Steven, you talk like that, but go back and read Sean Baby's articles. That man is one of the funniest people who ever lived.
All right, I'll do it, but only because you could actually name drop a
crack. Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm surprised you guys don't know more about Sean Baby.
I don't, but I will find out after we record.
Okay.
So, Kevin hits on this hot elf, and then...
Because he's a very advanced 9-year-old.
Hey, man, he goes grocery shopping and coupon cutting. So he...
He's thinking about his future. What's up, baby?
She sends him over to Santa. She's like, oh, he's leaving, but he can catch him before he gets to his car. So he runs across the street, and there's a dude playing Santa Claus who has his beard pulled down under his chin.
Yeah. And he's got a parking ticket.
Yeah, and he... So So he, like, in a panic, puts his beard up over his face, tries to still be in character. I don't know why.
I know you're not the real Santa Claus.
But I know you work for him.
He's trying to put the beard back up over his mouth.
But he basically, what he wishes that, is this when he wishes his family hadn't gone away?
Yeah, he wishes he had his family back. And I'm like, if I were this Santa Claus, I'd be very interested in this wish. Like, is this kid a fucking orphan who got out of the orphanage? Like, what the fuck is going on here?
It's so depressing the way he presents it. He's just
you could
like,
see the look in the guy's face, like, yeah, the Santa Claus's like, face, too.
I don't know what's happening. But I'll see what I can do.
And then he makes up for it with 3 Tic Tacs.
One of my elves took all the candy canes.
But yeah, no, this is like... Because I think we all have the same train of thought, where it's just like, oh, is this kid an orphan? Did this kid lose his family to a terrorist attack?
No, man, this was 1990.
Is this a Dickensian orphan, you know? It's just like, hey, sir, my mom got the tuberculosis. But no, he's just like, oh, man, I shouldn't take this kid with me to, like, a warm home. He's just like, nah, I got 3 Tic Tacs for you.
I'll get him through the night.
Santa's got a party to get to. We gotta go.
Like, I think this may be the most callous moment of the movie, you know, it's just like, I could help you, but...
No.
Nah.
Because this is the first adult Kevin has admitted his predicament to.
Yeah.
He's saying, I have no one. And the adult's like, nah, I don't really give a shit.
It's 9 o'clock on Christmas Eve, dude. I got places to be.
Wasted. And that goes back to your existential terror you're talking about. Yeah. Like, he is alone and no one gives a shit.
Yo, straight
that's
up.
That's exactly the real, that's real life in a nutshell.
I think Albert Camus, like, you know, ghost wrote this and passed it off to Chris Columbus. It was just like, listen, people thought the stranger was bad. People were terrified of the fall. Home alone is where I get them. Yeah, the only real choice is suicide.
Oh, Jesus.
The last scene of the Home Alone director's cut. Camera pans out on Kevin McAllister, who slit his wrist in the bathtub. With, like, one slice of pizza floating on a plate in front of him.
And in the depths of winter, I found in myself an invincible summer.
We're all terrible people.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm all right with it. All right, so Kevin starts wandering home. He sees a family that's like having a happy Christmas Eve get together, and he gets sad. He starts wishing he wasn't a murderer or a. What? Kevin's a murderer. He wished his family dead.
Yep. Yep. That's pretty much it.
I'm pretty sure he hasn't come to the realization that, or like, I don't think he thinks he killed them. I think he just drove them all away.
Well, I mean, disappeared, dead, you know.
They're gone from his life either way.
Yeah, but he didn't, like, see any corpses or anything. That would be traumatizing.
True. All right, anyway.
Mummy salt bus.
he wanders into the church that he was hiding out at earlier, and there's, like, I don't know, 10 people inside the whole church other than the choir. And as he's sitting down, he realizes that old man Marley's staring him down. And he walks over and he says, yeah. Well, he walks over and he says, Merry Christmas with a smile. And he says, may I sit down? And Kevin's kind of freaked out. He's like, wait, you should be murdering me right now. Why are you being nice?
Sanctuary. You're in a church.
And they talk out their problems. They have a little therapy session.
Yeah, because old man Marley's like, you know, like, that's my granddaughter up there. I come here to see her sing because I'm not welcome around my son anymore. And Kevin's like, well, why is that? And, you know, Kevin's doling out life lessons left and right here because he's the most mature 8-year-old that ever lived. He's like, well, you should call your son.
Truly the Buddha of the Midwest.
Yeah, more or less. You should call your son. Well, what if you won't talk to me? Well, then at least you know and you don't have to spend your life wondering. Like, that's fucking good advice right there.
Yeah, but he also finds out that that old man Marley didn't kill anybody. He's like, oh, there's a lot of things being said about me. He casually drops the fact that there's rumors that he's a murderer. Like, just throws it out there. Like, yeah, I know people are saying I killed everybody.
But
I
totally didn't.
Which is exactly what
a killer would say.
Yeah.
He hears the clock, or not the clock. He hears the church bells ringing that it's 8 o'clock. And
oh, shit, I gotta go.
I gotta bounce. And he runs home. And he starts laying out his plan to defend his house, and he says...
He doesn't start laying out a plan. He lays out a plan and booby traps his entire house in less than an hour.
And he makes that fucking macaroni and cheese. He doesn't get a chance to eat it.
But he makes it. Lights the candles and everything.
Yep.
So there's a little scene, you know, a couple scenes of him setting his traps, and this is when the movie gets... really influential to what I wanted to be like as a kid. I wanted to
get real.
Like you said earlier, you were like putting twine around your house. I know that at some point in my childhood, I drew out a map of how I would booby trap my house. But he has his map, and it's, you know, his battle plan. And he has, you know, the tar on the stairs. He has the micro machines at the bottom of the stairs. Inside, you know, a red hot. What is that? Is that like a grill starter? I don't even know what that thing is. And he puts on the back doorknob. Or the, yeah.
The front door.
The front door knob. What is, what is that?
No clue. I don't know.
It's a, I don't know. It's a red hot device. I don't know what it does.
I don't know. Maybe it had an application in 1990, but we've since moved past that technology. And no clue. So none of us know what it is.
He pulls it from the grill, so I assume it's some kind of starter. But anyway.
Maybe it's like a warmer. Maybe like you put something on it and it keeps it. I don't know. Well, then again, why would it get so fucking hot then?
Yeah. I have no idea. But anyway, he puts Christmas ornaments, like glass ornaments under the, like, a window.
But he leaves open to entice them in.
Girl. He does the paint cans.
Micro machines.
Yeah. Glue on.
My personal favorite, the blowtorch over the back door.
Right.
Ice all over everything.
Oh, yeah. He
so much ice.
Gets the hose and sprays down everything so it's all slippery as fuck.
And like Tim said, he devises this plan. He has all the time to set up all these traps. And has time to make his macaroni and cheese. And he sits down, and the clock chimes 9 o'clock. And he's like, oh shit, it's go time.
Shit's about to go down.
At which point, Harry and Marv show up, indicating that they are the most punctual and official cat burglars to ever work the streets of Chicago.
Yes, we're here to keep our 9 o'clock burglary appointment.
We said 9 o'clock, and by God, we meant it.
If your local cat burglars are better at being where they're supposed to be than Comcast, there's a problem.
Maybe they're the most responsible people in this entire film.
Do you ever think that maybe, like, Harry is, like, some weird obsessive compulsive? He knows exactly what time all the lights come on. He has to be there at exactly 9 o'clock to rob this house.
Yeah, I think there's room to explore this.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like... Marv is absolutely the pinky to Harry's brain.
Yeah.
He's just like kind of like a doofy fuck-up who doesn't really give a shit. He just wants to break stuff with a crowbar most of the time. Doesn't really care about stealing. But Harry is all about the art of burglary, you know?
He's in it for the love.
Yeah, he's in it for the artistry. He wants to make a name for himself as an effective criminal. And not only that, a damn good one. Must have taken a lot of time to perfectly time out each... house's automated timers for their Christmas lights to come on.
And somehow he just gets fucked up by the most precocious 9-year-old. That would be
maddening. If I was trying to rob somebody's house and, like, a little kid foiled me, I don't know how I would handle that. Not well. I would be adding, infanticide to my list of crimes.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a nice step up from cat burglary. Yeah. Well, you know, actually, we'll get to it, but, like, they do intend to torture and kill Kevin later on.
They absolutely do.
They did make that step. So there's room for that. All right. So let's walk through this house of horrors.
I played a game last night when I was watching this again called Disabled or Dead. based on the reaction to the traps.
All right.
So if you have a list of traps one by one, I'll tell you how I remember it going. Because remember, everyone, I work as an emergency medical technician. I've seen bad things happen to people, and I will give you a detailed analysis of why I think it would either disable them for at least temporarily or kill them.
This is a great game. All right, so first things first, they knock on the back door, and Kevin shoots Harry in the dick with a BB gun.
Disabled for the night. If you got shot in a testicle with a BB gun from point-blank range, you wouldn't be doing shit for the rest of the night. You wouldn't be able to walk.
And then Marv sticks his head through the door. This is the dog door, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and shot in the forehead.
Shot in the forehead with the same BB gun. That
would hurt, but it wouldn't actually deter you from doing anything. Your head's pretty hard where your testicles are not. From that close in like a 1990-era BB gun... probably enough force to rupture a testicle if it was a direct hit.
That sounds like it would be high.
That's pretty awful.
Immediate trip to the hospital. Yeah.
All right, so disabled.
Yeah, disabled on both.
Okay.
Well, very temporarily for the forehead for the rest of the night for the testicle shot.
Okay, so they split up, and Harry goes to the front, Marv goes to the basement. Then, I did have a quick note. I wrote this is where I have it in my notes, but Joe Pesci, we didn't mention this at all, but... 2 months before Home Alone came out, Goodfellas was released. So basically, Joe Pesci was probably filming Home Alone and Goodfellas at the same exact time, around the same time. Mm-hmm. And throughout the filming of Home Alone, Joe Pesci kept forgetting that it was a kid's movie and was saying fuck constantly throughout most of these scenes. Which is like, yeah, he was dropping F-bombs the entire time, and he kept having to be pulled aside by Chris Columbus and say, dude, chill out. There's like an 8-year-old over there. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't say fuck in front of him. I was just, sorry, it's where I am in my notes. I also
read that Joe Pesci purposely tried to avoid Macaulay Culkin on the set so that he would appear mean.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah.
Oh,
that's some psychological torture right there.
Also, I'm just not convinced that Joe Pesci doesn't just say fuck constantly.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure he does too. So, okay, so both Harry and Marv go to two ends of the house, and the stairs have been covered with water, which had frozen in an hour, to a thick sheet of ice. Harry slips up the front stairs and then falls, I guess, on his back. Mm-hmm. And then Marv...
That would hurt. It wouldn't be necessarily disabling or murderous.
Just, yeah. I've slipped on ice and hit my head several times.
Yeah.
And it's hurt.
It sucks.
Only blacked out, I think, one of those times. So, yeah, it hurts, but not disabled.
In this case, it would hurt a lot, but it would not be disabling.
And Marv falls down the basement stairs.
Down the basement steps. This is, I'm looking at it, I'm thinking at least a broken tailbone. At least a broken coccyx. If I didn't see if he hits his head. If he hits his head on every step, potentially a concussion, potentially blacked out, potentially done for the night. But a broken coccyx, that'll fuck you up too. Well, not quite as bad as actually probably worse than a ruptured testicle. But it would be real difficult to walk with a broken coccyx.
So
again, disabling.
Okay, so here, I think this is where we're going to get our first. Mm-hmm. So Marv gets into the basement. He eventually gets through the back door, and he goes to pull the chain for the light
switch.
This
is my favorite trap because it's the most fucking ingenious.
It's so good.
This one is actually one of my favorite too. So Marv pulls the chain for the light, and from the laundry chute, falls down, what, maybe 14, 15 feet?
Mm-hmm.
An iron, and smashes him right in the face.
Like, right dead.
Yeah.
Immediately dead. Like, not even a chance of survival. More than likely, extremely dead.
Without
immediate medical attention.
At the same time, Harry, in the front of the house, grabs the front door handle, which has been heated up by that weird grill heater upper thing, and he burns, gets what, maybe third degree burns?
I would say, like, looking at it when they show it, I would say it looks like the area where the M is imprinted is probably second degree, the rest being first degree. If not immediately medically treated, that could result in a pretty nasty infection and lead to an amputation eventually.
That sucks. All right.
Well, I mean, he gets arrested, so I'm sure they take care of it when they get him to jail.
Right. But. So then we're back to Marv. He's risen from the dead, and he's climbing the stairs, which has been covered in tar.
So then
a nail has been hidden, kind of sticking up from the tar. So he's removes his socks and his shoes, walking up the stairs, and then...
Because they get stuck with the tar.
Right. And then he steps on a nail, which goes through his foot. Pretty much completely.
Yeah. Again, another potential infection in the future. I mean, well, like, the addition of tar to the open wound... Probably already infected at this point.
Right.
But he also falls off the stairs again. So if he already had a broken coccyx, he's just breaking bones further. Disabling, extremely painful, but he could potentially get up and keep going if we don't count the fact that he died when the iron hit him in the face.
Okay. So not counting the deaths and dismemberment, Harry comes back around. He goes to the kitchen where he opens the door and gets burned by a blowtorch.
He's under that blowtorch for a good, like, 10 or 15 seconds, which are my favorite 10 or 15 seconds in the movie because of Joe Pesci's face. Again, probably third-degree burns to his fucking head, and more than likely dead if he doesn't get treated immediately. Third-degree burns are really nothing to fuck with, people.
I also, you told me last time we were talking about this movie that there's like a 10-hour...
Yeah, somebody made a 10-hour YouTube loop of just the fire hitting Joe Pesci's head and him screaming.
But you also told me that as some families around Christmas time put on the TV the Yule log. I know Comcast is like a Yule log.
Netflix has one.
Unending, just a pretend fireplace. Mm-hmm. But your family...
We use the 10-hour Joe Pesci's head burning. That is our Christmas tradition.
I love it. It's so great. So then,
probably dead from the third degree.
Probably dead. All right. So
not immediately, but very soon.
But then he survives, and he goes through the next door where he runs through like a saran wrap, like a clear saran wrap covered in glue. And then he like trips a wire, and a fan blows feathers onto him. So he gets basically essentially tarred and feathered.
Yeah, but saran wrap over your mouth is really dangerous if you don't expect it. And he's inhaling glue fumes, too. So now we have, like, multiple head traumas. Immediately hit in the face with saran wrap, covered in glue. And not, like, regular glue. Like, he was using, like, fucking industrial-ass glue. Like, so he's high, at the very least, if not brain damage. And he very luckily does not inhale the saran wrap and die. So that one's not necessarily super dangerous, but it would fuck him up a bit.
So next, Marv comes through a window and steps on the Christmas ornaments.
First, very painful. Not disabling, not deadly.
And then they meet up. Finally, Harry and Marv are back together.
One of my favorite lines of the movie.
Why the hell did you take your shoes off?
Why the hell are you dressed like a chicken?
They run towards the front foyer, slip on micro machines. They each land on their backs.
More and more head trauma.
And then
their occipital plates are taking a pounding throughout the course of this movie.
Kevin says the line, "You guys give up, or are you thirsty for more?"
Improvised.
Improvised. I heard that too.
Really?
Yeah. Little Macaulay just Macaulay dropping great just lines.
Throwing it out. So now they try to run up the stairs and paint can to the face.
Right.
Dead. Not just from getting hit in the face with a paint can. I don't know if you guys have ever picked up. It depends on how full the paint cans are, but they look pretty full.
Let's say it's 3/4 of the way full.
Oh, dead. Because it's so heavy. It's sturdy metal. It's coming at the speed of gravity, plus being pushed by, you know, a 9-year-old who's heaving it at you. Hits you in the face dead on and knocks you down the stairs and you hit your head on the floor. Chances are you're not getting up from that.
So they're dead again.
Yep, dead again.
For what, the third time?
Marv has died twice so far. Harry has also died twice if you count the burns as being deadly. Somebody will probably try to debate me on the fact that the burns are deadly. But, I mean, it's top of the head burns, and if he doesn't get them treated immediately, it'll be real bad. His body will at least be in shock from the third-degree burns to his skull.
So, Kevin runs upstairs. They follow him up the stairs. Oh, they find out that, you know, Harry's missing his gold tooth. Yep. It's now missing.
I'm gonna kill him.
And they run up the stairs, and Harry trips over the tripwire.
Well, isn't this Kevin, after he hits him in the face with the paint cans, he makes the phone call to the police and says, my home is being invaded. He gives, like, the address across the street.
Yeah, he calls the cops.
My name is Murphy.
My name is Murphy.
I'm just imagining, like, the Murphy from RoboCop doing that.
So,
can you imagine RoboCop arresting Harry and Marv? Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Very upsetting.
Your move, creep.
I love that line.
Me too.
So he runs down the hallway. Harry trips over the tripwire that's in the hall, and Marv jumps over it and then grabs Kevin's pants as he's like trying to run up to the third floor. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, "Oh, I got him,
this
Harry."
Is where Kevin's plan almost falls apart.
Yeah, he almost can't. I mean, and I'm thinking about it. Like, granted, he's like laying on his stomach, but if a grown man's holding a 9-year-old, the 9-year-old's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But luckily, the little tarantula that escaped from Buzz's room is crawling on the stairs. And Kevin picks it up and he puts it right on Marv's face, who unleashes the worst blood-curdling scream I've ever heard.
It's so funny.
Ever recorded. And I did read that Daniel Stern agreed to do one take of this.
Yes.
He's like, "You could put a live tarantula on my face once." And he couldn't scream.
Because it would scare the spider.
So he had to, like, fake it. He just had to have, like...
He mimed the screaming and then added the scream in later.
But it's fucking perfect. It's
so good.
It's the greatest sound ever.
It's up there. It's a really good scream. And then Marv gets... Well, the spider runs away, and Marv gets up, and it's now on Harry. Oh, no, he, like, freaks out, and the spider lands on Harry.
Yeah.
And he picks up his crowbar, and he's, like, raring to hit the spider. He's like, "Where is he? Where is he? Marv, what are you doing?"
Marv. And he smashes him in the sternum with a crowbar.
Disabling, not deadly. Depends on how hard he get hit in the sternum, though.
He was hit pretty hard.
Yeah, he was hit pretty hard.
Quite a few times.
Joe Pesci gets up and takes the crowbar away and starts beating Marv with it. "How do you like it?" Such a contentious relationship between the two.
That's so great. So then they run upstairs. They follow Kevin upstairs, who has taken bike handles.
Yeah.
And he has a line, a completely straight line.
He's created his own zip line.
Yeah. To his treehouse. And so he, you know, flies across the yard, gets to the treehouse.
Kicks out the back wall in the process.
Right, yeah. Going pretty fast on that one. And then, you know, Harry and Marv try to then climb...
I was impressed by their upper body strength during this scene.
Right.
Because they don't look like the, you know...
The most fit of men?
No, not really. But I did like the little bit of continuity where Harry takes a handkerchief and wraps his burned hand before he tries to grab on.
Really? I didn't notice that.
That's I always wondered why he did that, and then I realized that, oh, he just burnt that hand to shit. And so grabbing onto rope with a burned hand would be a really, really bad idea. So he covers it in a handkerchief.
I was thinking, though, that even though they do say the line, like, why don't we just go back through the house? Like, no, I don't want
to. That's what he wants us to do.
Yeah.
Through his little nightmare.
But they could have just gone with their original plan, gone back through the house, robbed it, and left.
Well, at this point, they're so angry, they just want to murder Kevin. That's what it's all about.
I guess, but, you know, they're cat burglars. They're not necessarily, like, murderers. But I guess they quickly... I guess after being tortured for a little while.
Yeah, kind of, absolutely. I mean, at this point, honestly, they're both dead twice over, and
right.
I don't know, maybe it's just they want to take revenge on their murderer
I guess
before they move on to the next plane of existence.
So, as they're climbing hand-in-hand over this rope line, Kevin cuts it, and they slam into the side of the brick house.
One of them, I don't remember who was at the back, because they kind of, like, one kind of lands mostly on the other. Whoever hits the wall would probably be dead. And I don't know why they didn't think to let go of the fucking rope, because it would be way more cushiony to fall into, like,
the snow.
Deep snow than to bounce off a brick wall. So I think Marv dies again at this point, because I'm pretty sure Joe Pesci's the one who is saved from the brick by Marv's body.
So Kevin runs to the neighbor's house,
which is disabling for both of them,
right.
They hit the brick and then fall.
But that's the last trap.
Yeah, that's the last.
So, what's the count? Marv dead three times?
Yep, and Harry dead twice.
All right. So Kevin runs across the yard.
Five deaths. In the span of like 20 minutes of movie.
And this is a pretty violent film. And he runs across to the neighbor's house, which was flooded by the wet bandits earlier in the week. And but he's outsmarted by them, and they just run through the front door, I guess.
Yeah.
And they catch him at the top of the basement stairs, they hang him on some coat hooks, and they talk about how they're going to torture him to death.
Well, all the things that he did to them.
Yeah, but they're going to bite off his... They're going to start by biting off his fingers, and they're going
to... In this little trivia for you, Joe Pesci actually bit Macaulay Culkin's finger hard enough to leave a scar.
Really?
Yeah, during that scene.
Wow.
That's awesome.
It's actually really impressive.
Yeah. So, yep.
But they're assaulted by being hit in the face with a shovel by old man Marley, who comes to save Kevin, and then he takes him home, and the wet bandits get arrested. And
okay, and this is where
I talked to Lou where
there was a little plot hole in this movie for me, and I don't know if it's necessarily a plot hole. It just seems like a little bit of a Deus Ex Machina. Why the fuck would old man Marley just happen to be in a random neighbor's house at that moment in time to rescue Kevin from the wet bandits? The only thing I can think of is that maybe he saw Kevin run from his house into the next house, and then maybe saw two guys chasing Kevin and thought
to
investigate. Yeah.
Probably out there salting the walk. Mummy salt.
Yeah.
Mummy salt in the walk.
I'm going to say mummy salt as many times as I possibly can in my day-to-day
Absolutely.
Life.
Just take it. Just run with it.
So that was like the thing for me. Like, why would he just happen to break into his neighbor's house at this moment in time? But, I mean, Harry Moore probably left the front door open. He thought it was weird. He came in to investigate.
Fair enough. That didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, it was just a weird thought that I had.
Director's cut.
Yeah.
He's watching with binoculars. He's watching them all get tortured. Mm. I don't know. Anyway.
It's like a Rear Window kind of thing.
So the next scene... the cops show up and they arrest the wet bandits. The next scene is Kevin's mom in the back of the van with the polka van, and she's talking to John Candy's character. And this is like the greatest story.
Yeah, I love the story. It's so good.
So he's telling her a story. Like, she tells him why, you know, the whole deal. Like,
yeah, and this scene is depressing because it's John Candy explaining why every member of the polka band is a shitty parent.
Right.
So yeah, John, he's never even met his kid, you know. And Iggy or whatever, he's a... Why did you laugh at Iggy?
I just thought of Rob Schneider.
Oh, okay.
You said Iggy and Rob Schneider's face popped into my head, so I laughed.
He forgets his kids' names, and John Candy goes on to explain, well... Catherine O'Hara says, have you ever left a child at home while you went on vacation? And he goes, no. I did leave one at a funeral home once.
With the corpse.
With the corpse. He was there for all day with the corpse. Yeah, but, you know, he was all right. He, 6 or 7 weeks, came around, started talking again. That's my... Oh, my God. I laughed so hard at that. And I laughed so hard at it every time because I always forget about how light John Candy makes the horrible emotional scarring of his child sound at this point in the movie. Kids are resilient. You know, he'll bounce back.
do you think you would it would take you to bounce back from spending all day with a corpse
depends
as a
7-year-old? Yeah,
and I who mean, the corpse belonged to.
Yeah, exactly. That's important,
like, too. Is it his mom?
Corpse? Yeah.
I don't know.
I've spent a lot of time with corpses in my real life, so it wouldn't be that traumatizing to me now. But
Jesus.
Not on purpose.
all right, so the next morning is Christmas morning. It's snowing. Kevin wakes up. He kind of is hoping to see his family, you know, Christmas miracle show mm-hmm. up. But he's disappointed when he walks downstairs because no one's there. But he's alone for all of, what, 30 seconds before mm-hmm. mom comes home.
Yeah, mom comes in. And here's the part of the movie where if I were Catherine O'Hara, I would be so fucking pissed. And I'll keep explaining what happens. No, keep explaining.
Oh, keep explaining.
You're already there.
All right, so Catherine O'Hara shows up, and she has a little heartfelt moment with Kevin. You know, she says, she's so, so sorry. Like, can you forgive me? And he smiles at her, and they run and they hug. And it's this beautiful moment between mother and son. And he says, where's everybody else? And she says, oh, they couldn't make it, honey. They got stuck in Paris. And then, boom, door opens, the entire fucking family shows up. Catherine O'Hara gave up $1,000 in cash, a pocket translator, a fake Rolex,
a ring,
some earrings, everything she fucking had on her to get home 30 seconds. She rode all night in a van with smelly polka dudes to get home 30 fucking seconds before the rest of her family.
Yeah.
And then, furthermore, everybody gets home, and even all the kids are like, hey, man, it's pretty cool. You didn't burn the house down. I'm like, yeah. And then his dad's like, what's up? How you doing?
What, he says something like, he's like, oh, what a funny guy. That's his line, right?
Well, yeah, because it's like he's explaining that he went to the store and did shit. Oh, what a funny guy. I'm like, dude, you abandoned your child.
I'm just a funny guy.
Yeah. How are you not, like, happy that he's alive and not... something terrible has happened to your property. Two, how are you not so just fucking proud of him for fending off burglars? Although, granted, he hasn't mentioned the burglars yet. But, I mean, seriously. You abandon your kid and you show no interest in his well-being whatsoever. And then D, you...
A, two, and D.
I almost got him.
That's almost both of us.
That's almost both of us.
But how... I forget what my point was because I was trying to get to D. I forget what the last point I wanted to make was. Ah, fuck.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Peter McAllister sucks. That's
Peter McAllister sucks. And that's the end of the movie. I mean, the only other thing we see is Kevin.
Scene of Kevin looking out the window.
And old man Marley is reunited with his family.
He's hugging his granddaughter.
With his son.
Sweet.
Really touching moment. Yeah. Really makes you feel the Christmas spirit that you don't really get anywhere else in this movie. That, like, because this movie is about a good kid being reunited with his shitty family, and there's not a whole lot to feel good about right there, but old man Marley getting to hug his granddaughter on his own property with his son and his wife nearby, and his daughter-in-law nearby, that's a sweet moment that makes you feel Christmassy for a second before you hear Buzz go, Kevin, what did you do to my room? And Kevin makes it, oh, shit face. And that's where the movie
that's
ends.
That's
it. That's it.
But yeah. I've watched it twice in the last week, both for the show, I guess, but, you know, I'm probably going to watch it again before Christmas, and...
Yeah, it's one of those movies that's infinitely rewatchable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
know. It's Christmas.
Oh, man. Nope. It's on Netflix.
Nope,
it's on Netflix.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
Not doing it. Nope. After we ruined Scared Stupid for me, I'm not doing any more Ernest movies.
You should. You should watch. At least Goes to Jail, and then Saves Christmas. See, you'll like
Saves Christmas. At least Goes to Jail. I'll give that one a shot.
The importance is to not think
the
about
importance
this.
Of watching Ernest.
Touché, that was great.
Squeezing in a little Oscar Wilde reference in your classless podcast.
The importance of watching Ernest.
Oh man, that was so good. I never would have thought of that. That's awesome. All right. Well, I think it's pretty apparent that we all collectively agree that.
No, this movie absolutely stands up.
I'm just... When we're so in agreement like this, and especially with a movie as beloved as Home Alone, you have to wonder about that motherfucker who says that they don't like Home Alone.
I think you all know people that don't like it, right? Do you know anybody?
I don't know. Oh, a single person doesn't like
Home Alone. I know people that say they don't like Home Alone. And part of me wants to say, like, you're probably just saying that. You want to be that person that's like the dissenter that's like, nah, I don't like that. Like, it's almost as corny as like, I don't like that popular thing. Like, I like the things that are...
It's just...
I love Ernest Saves Christmas. Mm. I hate Home Alone.
Yeah.
It's just a funny thing to say. I don't even know if it would be like, I love Saves Christmas. It would probably be like, nah, I only watch like, you know, it's a Wonderful Life. It's Christmas.
Yeah. That's definitely a thing.
Never seen that either.
But no, I'm just... If you hate Home Alone, I want to hear from you. Like, you're the person that I want to talk to.
Fair point.
Because I just don't understand you on any level. Like, so, what kind of individual... Like, what argument could you possibly have against this?
So, I found some arguments against this, and I told Tim this a little bit before you got here, that this film wasn't... It was a huge hit at the box office. I mean, we said it had made $500 million. Massive. People love it. It's revered.
Roger fucking Ebert...
Didn't
two?
Two and a half stars out of four.
Out of four.
It stands at like a 54% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Which is bullshit because it's easily an 80% movie.
Well, it's like, I think it was 79 on fans.
How could anybody not like Home Alone?
Well, okay, yeah, it's 54 with critics, percent. 54% with critics, 79% with, you know, everyday commoners.
Even 79%.
Real ass motherfuckers, I believe the appropriate
term is. And what Roger Ebert said was, for his Chicago Sun-Times review, 2.5 out of 4 stars, he compared the elaborate booby traps in the film to Rube Goldberg, writing, "They're the kinds of traps that any 8-year-old could devise if he had a budget of tens of thousands of dollars and the assistance of a crew of movie special effects people, and criticized the plot as so implausible that it makes it hard for him to really care about the plight of the kid."
See, that's just A, cold-hearted, because leaving a child at home for Christmas is a really shitty thing to happen to anybody. Additionally, there's nothing Rube Goldberg-like about these traps. They don't rely on one another to, like, complete one giant overarching plan. It's not like the board game Mousetrap, you know, where like the ball has to roll down the thing and then the dude does a flip and lands on the pressure switch. That it's like, no, it's a paint can on a string. Yeah, it would be difficult for a kid to do that, but we've already established how good he is at rationally thinking. He's a very logical child. I'm sure he found a way to like lasso his rope around the paint can and the beam that he swings it from. I don't agree that you would need a budget of tens of thousands of dollars to lay out some micro machines in broken glass.
They have to be arranged perfectly.
Oh, fuck that. Have you ever stepped on a micro... The only thing he could have done to make his traps better is put Legos on the floor after he made them lose their shoes, because stepping on a Lego is the worst fucking experience.
That would have been a death.
Yeah. Dead. From sheer pain.
So, I just found an article that I haven't read yet, but it's entitled "Architects Analyze Kevin McAllister's Home Alone Booby Traps." And... Oh, they say it. Oh, okay, subtitle. "It still stands up all these years later." So I'll post this. I haven't read this yet, but apparently architects think that all this stuff is good to go. Kevin was a smart dude.
And I like Roger Ebert. I think he was a decent guy in what he did with his life. I think he was an interesting character. I think this particular review is wrong and terrible, and I'm glad he got face cancer.
Holy shit.
You don't fucking shit on Home Alone, where I'm from.
Is there anything else you guys want to talk about with this movie? I mean, I think we pretty much covered it.
I think Steven's point that it's an existentialist terror is actually really good.
This is something that I want to explore.
Yeah, you're going to have to write down the name of that philosopher or whatever, whoever they were.
Well, I mean, think about it. We have a kid who wishes his family away, gets everything that he wants, right? And then realizes that he's completely alone in the world and no one gives a shit when he talks to the one adult who totally disregards the fact that he's home alone. Oh, another question that actually just popped into my head is, why would the old man take Kevin home to an empty house and not think anything of it after he rescues him from the burglars?
I actually don't know. I didn't think about that.
That's actually a really good point.
No, you go on home now. Yeah. Oh, there's no one home? Oh, well. Weird. Oh, God.
Anyway, it's an existentialist horror film in that Kevin is completely disregarded by everything. And people try to hurt him. He defends himself, and that's great. That works. Apparently, the Starship Troopers lesson of pure force has resolved more conflicts than words ever have. And then he gets reunited with his shitty family, and the first thing his shitty family does is scream at him for doing a little bit of damage to some shitty old wooden shelves in the house. What did you do to my room? I fucking knocked your shelf off the wall. Big fucking deal. I was home alone for 4 fucking days, and I didn't die. I'm 8. Fuck you, Buzz. Buzz, look what you turned out to be. Wolf.
Oh, yeah,
we looked up a photo of current Buzz.
And it's dark.
Have you seen it?
Real dark.
I'll post it on the Facebook page for sure, but current Buzz is...
Current Buzz looks exactly like Bulk from Bulk and Skull from the Power Rangers.
I don't know who that is.
Steven got it.
This is the fat guy.
Yeah. But, like, he looks like he ate a whole other Buzz.
I'm pulling up the photo now so Steven can see it.
Okay.
And I'll post it on the Facebook page. Here we go. This is what I want to show the world. Can you see that?
Holy shit. Yeah.
There's a lot of chins going on right there. A
lot of chins.
Train.
All right, so I think we're good on Home Alone.
Stand at the test of time. Show it to your kids. Show it to your friends.
Watch it
to everyone.
Get that 10-hour YouTube clip of Harry getting burned.
Spread the cheer, everyone.
That's it?
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
I'm really upset that we just didn't get a chance to observe your hanging clauses comment.
Oh?
Because this time of year, the hanging clause. Like,
that's
some real dark shit.
I did not even realize.
Just Santa stuck in a tree, like, swinging back and forth.
That went right over my head.
I didn't even realize I made a joke. Well, that's how funny I am.
So, let's talk about what we're going to be doing next.
Oh, yeah. The Christmas episodes notwithstanding, we decided that we had done some, like, you know, all the movies we've done recently have been relatively serious, and they were made in the 90s, they don't feel 90s enough to what we're going for on this podcast. So the guys and I, we talked about it, and we've decided that the next movie we're going to review for Dial-Up Movies is, what year was that released, Lou? I want to say like 96 or 7?
Look it up.
Look it up for me real quick.
With this one, we're really jumping into the real deep end of
95. This is the 90th thing you can possibly get, I think.
Right in the middle, like the dead center.
And it's so fucking 90s.
Have you seen it in a while? When was the last time you saw
it? In a while, but
I watched it maybe like 8 months ago.
Okay, all right. I haven't seen this in probably more than 5 years, maybe closer to 10 years. It's been a long time since I've seen this.
We had a little debate about which movie was more 90s. The two entrants were the one we chose and Batman and Robin. And Batman and Robin lost. So next time we get together to do this little show of ours, we're going to be reviewing 1995's Clueless. Starring
Alicia Silverstone
and Paul Rudd. Come
a young
on, guys.
Paul Rudd.
Yeah. It's
also Brittany Murphy.
Well, RIP.
Yeah.
Oh my God. All right, well, I guess that concludes our discussion about Home Alone. Please tune in next time for a discussion of Clueless. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Kwatsu, dudes.
We can't buy knives.
What did you say for Kwanzaa, by the way? I was trying to think of a way to work in a Kwanzaa joke at the end there.
Kwanzaa, dudes! Yeah. I think that's the joke right there.
Yeah.
Dial-Up Movies is part of the NeoZaz Podcast Network. Head over to neozaz.com for other great podcasts such as Star Wars and Character, The Greaties, The Great 80s Movie Debate, and Pass the Popcorn. You can find Dial-Up Movies and every podcast from NeoZaz on iTunes, where you can rate, review, and subscribe. Also, please check out our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can find us on both sites as Dial-Up Movies.